The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So it's all about the Rossies this morning, Keane. What scenes? Absolutely fantastic stuff. A pitch invasion in Castlebar. They hadn't done it for donkey's years. Well, I say donkey's years, 30-something years. And then beat Mayo. And it was scenes like they'd won a Connacht final. Now, you'll forgive them for that. Like, I mean, it's a way win like that in Castlebar.
It's the type of game and the type of win on a wet day, hard fought. I mean,
proper championship, wasn't it?
Like, well, when Meath beat Kildare in the league, there could have been a pitch invasion because of the nature of the game.
Yeah.
And winning a game by a narrow margin and winning it late and against all odds. So, look, fair play to them. It was great to see it.
It was absolutely great to see it. And there was a bit of kind of argy-bargy going in off the field. And you know what it felt like? I know there's the qualifiers. I know we've talked about before that a lot of these matches don't have that do or die. But this did, because Roscommon hadn't beaten Mayo in so long, and Mayo could not afford to go down the qualifier route. They didn't want to. They wanted to regain their dominance in Connacht. So it had that feel of an all or nothing kind of game about it, didn't it?
Yeah, well, look, it was a proper match between two Division 1 teams. I know Roscommon are relegated on this year's form, but yeah. Two teams that are reasonably evenly matched and capable of beating each other in a contest. And you know,
yeah, they play a good brand of football. We'll talk about that in the second half. Both of them contributed to that. And I think Anthony Cunningham, with a hurling background, deserves a huge amount of credit for that, for the style of football he has them playing. The easy thing for a hurling man would to go down the Rory Gallagher poacher route, or you'll go on back now and wait there, and when they come up, you know. But he's not doing that. He's not doing that at all. He's a nice blend of it. But I thought it was interesting with Damien Lawler interviewing Conor Cox after the game, who's an outstanding player, by the way.
Yeah,
very
good.
Just getting shots off there. Like, I mean, incredible. We'll talk about him performance of the weekend. But Lawler was going for this emotive kind of question, and he often says it, and you'd often compare it to kind of X Factor interviews. Like, what does this mean to you? Like, I have no interest in those type of questions. I've been a sideline reporter long enough. But it was a leading question. He says, Conor, since your move from Kerry, could you have envisioned anything like this? You know, he wanted Conor to say, Jesus, this is unbelievable. I never thought we might. And Conor Cox replied, to be honest, I suppose I could.
Yeah.
He said, Roscommon are a Division 1 team.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a surprise to us that we've come here. We almost beat them in the league here. Like, it was, yeah, you know, he gave him the answer the question deserved.
Absolutely. And I suppose it was the response of a man with confidence in himself.
And he did. I gave a good interview then.
You know, and look, fair play to him, because, you know, it's easy to say, oh, I can't believe a dream come true.
But that would have been pushed down that road.
Yeah, but also that would have been nonsense from his perspective as well. Yeah. And everyone would have seen through it. So a bit of honesty in a post-match interview.
Very good. Impressed me with his confidence, because he wouldn't have probably done. Now, not many people are watching on Sky, but I wouldn't think that came into his head. TV cameras in front of him. The easy thing to do would have been just go, oh God, it's just unbelievable. And then the fans came out and I never thought. He just didn't. He went, no.
I'm good enough. I've played against Mayo and I've kicked loads of scores against them before. Sure, why wouldn't I do it again?
Exactly. So that's fantastic. The miss free by McLaughlin. Geez, that was an easy free now, Keane. That was an easy free.
Yeah, it's...
He's not much of a free taker, McLaughlin. He does miss easy ones and can get good ones.
Yeah, to be fair, I would have backed him, but it was fairly obvious. On the day, I wouldn't have, because of his body language. The fact that Dermot O'Connor pulled rank and called him over. Conor Loftus wanted to take that free.
Right.
Conor Loftus was going over to take the ball. Dermot O'Connor, the captain, said no, called over Kevin McLaughlin. If you're a free taker and a free is given, if you want it, you're on the move early. You're not waiting to be called over.
Well, that's true.
So
yeah.
Kevin McLaughlin did not want to kick it. And to be honest, when a guy doesn't want to take a free, don't give it to him, because he's, generally speaking, they miss. There's a reason they don't want to kick it. They've a lack of confidence. Maybe McLaughlin just hasn't been kicking well, or he didn't have a great game. So he didn't want it. Loftus is coming on trying to, you know, make an impression. He wanted it.
Right, so that doesn't.
I would have let him
sense.
Take it.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. I didn't see Loftus looking for it.
But also, to be fair, maybe you'd say Loftus should have pulled the ball off Dermot O'Connor. But then again, there's the hierarchy in a team.
Yeah.
Dermot O'Connor's the captain. He's making a call. what he thinks is the best call for the team. I trust Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin, I trust you to kick it. Don't be shying away from it. You're well able to kick it, but
yeah,
I don't know.
And Killian, if Dermot O'Connor should have just beckoned to the sideline, or they had their five subs on at that stage, like, Killian O'Connor is a strange one. Obviously, we don't know the ins and outs. You'd imagine if Killian O'Connor, because Freeze hadn't been going brilliantly for them, that if he was in any way fit, he would have been good enough to come on there.
Or bring Evan Regan back on.
Yeah, even bring him back on for that one free. But then, look, Kevin McLaughlin took Freeze for a full season.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like he's never taken
him. He's well capable of kicking them. Yeah. It was just seemed to me that on the day, for whatever reason, he just didn't look like he had the belief in himself to get it. That's the type of kick it was in the end.
It was a tentative one, yeah, definitely. Yeah. An incredible stat, two stats. One's an incredible stat that's relevant and another that isn't. Only three players, and Early said this at the start in the CoCom, and I didn't believe him until I cross-referenced the two teams. Three Roscommon starters on Saturday night started last year's Connacht final against Galway. Three. Isn't that an incredible, incredible turnover? Only David Murray, Tygo Rourke and Niall Kilroy started last year's final.
That's very incredible. Now,
all five subs started last year's final and they gave them a great kick. But he's picked
a different... But it's eight of 20 or 21 players.
Unbelievable.
Like, that's a huge turnover.
Unbelievable. But three starters.
Yeah.
That is absolutely incredible what Roscommon are after doing to be able to do that. So fair play to them, and we'll talk more about that in part two. Sean McGoldrick had a tweet which is a bit more of a useless stat, but still it's a weird one. Remarkably, on the last three occasions Mayo have won the National League, 2019, 2001, 1970, they have lost to Roscommon in the subsequent Connacht Championship. So there's a good one. And Conor Cox's father...
The curse, it's the curse.
Conor Cox's father was on the last time that they... was on the Roscommon team the last time they won, and then his son played so well against Mayo on Saturday night. So all these things sometimes you wonder are written in the stars. Longford Kildare played out an absolute classic, 40 scores, 90 minutes. Absolutely unbelievable game that I left Tullamore and went home to watch Wexford and Galway in the hurling, which was an absolute shite match. And I watched a shite match in Tullamore between Laois and Westmeath. We'll talk a little bit about that in part two. Deplorable standard of football. And I watched another shite one in Amore Park between Meath and Carlow. So I didn't do too well. In fairness, the call to not watch Louth and Dublin and go home and watch Mayo Roscommon, at least that was one of my good calls this weekend. But Keane O'Neill is asking the public to stick with us. He said, no one's more disappointed with us. Stick with us. Last year would have been very easy to walk away and desert us after Carlow, and look how great a journey we're on. Something not quite right about Kildare. Longford decimated, missing eight starters from last year. We know all the starters gone. Rian Brady, Robbie Smith, like their scorers. They were missing just so many players. Kildare outscored Longford 1-8 to a point between 21st minute and 42nd minute. Then only scored 2 points kind of after that. Now, I know they were against the wind. Longford were 7 down in the 42nd minute and reeled Kildare in. I don't know, Kildare almost caught by Wicklow. They're sitting ducks, really, Kildare. Like, I mean, in a way, you'd wonder...
It doesn't look great for them, to be honest, at the minute. You would... look, it's very hard to know. These games can ebb and flow, and against the breeze, and Longford do have a lot of quality, but it's a bit of a meltdown to be that far ahead and to not see the game out.
Yeah, yeah.
For a team, you know, that's on the road with their manager
standard,
as long.
Yeah. Super 8 standard against Longford.
You don't
missing
expect
eight,
it.
Missing 8 regulars.
Yeah, you don't expect it.
You shouldn't be doing it. There was a good picture of their midfielder.
Gallagher.
Darren Gallagher. Yeah, Darren Gallagher, who is a guard. And I love pictures like that. The annual one is Pillar Caffrey being a guard at Croke Park after finishing up. But he was... he scored 222 during the league. He's obviously going to America and he can't play, which we talked last Thursday, being very unfair on him and shouldn't really be what the rule is about. Like, Longford can't afford to be without him. He's entitled to go if he wants. It's unfair.
The problem is
that these fellas are deciding to go anyway. So that rule, where they hoped maybe that they would prevent them from going, and we were saying last Thursday, what might keep them going is a club schedule during the year. So, because usually clubs are sitting idle all summer and they're allowing them to go. So there's other ways you can stop these fellas from going. But he was on Garda duty outside the ground. So I thought that was an interesting picture. What did you make of the Mannion, Paul Mannion red? It's an interesting one in that... I thought it was an unnecessary tackle from him. Now, your man was running very fast towards him and he stood his ground. Now, but he did put in the shoulder. In that instance, you put your hands out.
Mannion moved towards him and buried him. To be honest, it can happen in a game. I didn't think it was a red card, but the normal reaction of a player there when a player is coming towards them is they open their arms up and they kind of wrap the player and try and get a turnover.
I think so. Mannion went to hit him hard.
He was after a high ball came between him and his man. It was knocked down. Didn't see the game in full, so who knows, maybe he's made a couple of mistakes and he was just trying to get into the game.
He scored 2 points early, so he'd done alright.
It's just a physical bang. It's a foul. Yeah. It's a yellow card because it was probably overly aggressive. It wasn't a red.
Yeah, I probably think so as well. I think considering that the loud number 12, his name is escaping me now, he was so low. You know, Mannion, his intention wasn't to get him in the head. His intention was to hit
what
him.
What you have is a smaller, lighter player, gets to the ball first, wraps his body around it, and a bigger, stronger guy comes apace and just plants him. There's nothing much to it. Like, it's a foul. It's probably a yellow card, but it's no more than that. He didn't lead with the elbow. Look, he probably caught him slightly kind of in the chest or in the face. It wasn't a shoulder to shoulder. It looked a little bit aggressive from Mannion, but having said that, I didn't think it was a red card. Like, if we're giving out red cards for those types of incidents, it wasn't that late. I mean, the ball was fractionally late.
And it was a guaranteed yellow. Probably unfortunate to get a red for that, all right, in the championship. Jim Gavin wasn't happy about it. He says, Paul's a strong guy. He's a big man. He's 6'2". Thought the loud player crouched a bit, which is what I thought as well, which didn't help him. But the loud guy got up and played on. My initial reaction is certainly it's not a red. So we'll see how that works. 14,380 people went to this double header. Like I said, I went to the first one. I was just thinking about it. Why are you going to go to those two matches? Like, I sat through Mead and Carlow, which was just... There was no shock that this was a shit game. Mead playing outside the screen, Carlow not offering much, dropping loads of players ahead of the ball, putting no pressure on Mead in Mead's half of the field. A boring, dull, shite game. So that's grand. So Mead knew they were going to win it. That was guaranteed. So who from Mead would be really motivated, come down to Portlaoise and end up missing Mayo and Roscommon, stuck in traffic because the Dublin game was fixed for it.
It shouldn't have been a double header. If anything, the Carlow Mead game should have been in Tullamore, as it was originally supposed to be. You would have got more, I say more Mead fans would have gone to that, because the prospect of heading down with an expected bigger crowd from Dublin just turns people off.
You won't get out of there. You know you're going to win. You'll go to the next one. It's going to be a terrible, terrible game. And that's the product that's been served up. And then if you want
to... That's just the reality.
That's the reality. Yeah. And there's no bullshit in this. This is all feeding into attendances. Like, I mean, there's no doubt the Laois crowd yesterday was very poor. You know, Westmeath are a defensive team. And it's in their heads. This won't be great now to watch, and there might be a better one on telly, although Donegal Fermanagh was on telly. But and then you knew Dublin were going to hammer loud. The whole thing was the handicap, and basically why would Dublin bother coming down? They've been at games before, they've got the autographs, they've had their children down there, and they're like, I'm not going down. What's the point in going down there? The Dublin fans have kind of ticked all those boxes now, you know, and I think a lot of that is bringing your children there and then getting them out in the field, meeting the players, and then you're like...
I love this one. The Dubs love to travel. Yeah, maybe because it was a novelty for a while, but if they have to travel all the time, they're not going to bother their arse. They're going to say, well, why isn't this game in Croker beside us and we get more people into it?
Yeah, well, in fairness to them now, they will travel if they thought that if their support meant something. If they thought their team needed them, I do think they would travel. Like, if they thought that the roar from the... They know their support is an advantage and they have a lot of it, that I think if they thought they were under pressure, they would definitely go more than 14,380. Keane O'Sullivan, interestingly, was cornerback, because we were wondering how they were going to fit in. Jack McCaffrey had been picked cornerback, so Keane O'Sullivan played in there. So that's obviously how they're going to manage all these good players. With James McCarthy, with Darren Gavin playing in midfield, it looks like James McCarthy might be back, wing back, and gives them a little bit of a selection headache, and Rory O'Carroll got brought on. So that's all the news out of a game I didn't see.
Yeah, well, look, they've an embarrassment of riches, so what else is there to say?
That's it. Yeah, so Mickey Hart brought off Cottle McShane, Peter Hart, Matty Donnelly. Was it 5 minutes into the second half? Very early anyway, yeah, the three of them were sitting beside each other.
They were deadly in the first half.
Deadly in the first half.
I watched the first half and they were moving the ball so well.
Here's the thing for me. Oh, there was one Peter Hart.
Unbelievable
crossfield
ball.
But I'm not going to lie, those balls are always on. Because
always
you're
on.
You're being marked from the front on that side. Those balls out across there are always on. But anyways, I was wondering about this. Now, it's obviously the threat of injury that made him bring him off. Why not let them kind of run amok together?
No, I think what you have is, in a squad like Tyrone have, those lads are playing all the time. They're secure in their place. They've done enough to stay in the team for the big game. If they don't give the game was over. If you don't bring on McCurry, McCallisky, they're already losing forwards off their panel.
Yeah.
I think you have to be brought on. If you're a sub there and you're not getting like 20-25 minutes, you're just thinking, what is the point in this commitment?
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. And then I was thinking that these McShay and Hart and Donnelly might are only about four competitive games into this kind of chemistry. Why not let Hart play those balls to McShay, and why not let them kind of polish this up and stuff like that? So
yeah, I know. Look, you can look at it both ways, but you know, sometimes you have a training match amongst yourselves, and sometimes it can be, right, we're going to play 35 minutes or whatever, and the first 20 minutes are brilliant, and then the last 15 minutes are shite. And you just think, if we just pulled it at 20 minutes, it would have been a brilliant session. It's a bit like that for the full forward line. They were playing so well. They were linking up well. Their movement was really good. It was looking so good. It was only going to get worse to the end of the game. So maybe it was a call. Like, there was a number of factors into it. I think it was a good move. Get them off. It's worked really well. We're going to be very confident in what we're doing, and we'll get game time into the other guys and keep them happy.
Yeah.
And no, give them an opportunity. So look, it and the game was over, Woody.
Ah, they're probably right, Jay. The game was over. And in fairness to Tyrone, they linked up, looked like they were linking up an awful lot better than against Derry. Very little kicking, unless they just went out. Tyrone are a conservative team by nature, so it's going to be very interesting to see how they line up and kick, what they'll do against Donegal. Because we know in the last 8 years, these two teams are very nervous playing each other. They're conservative. You know what I mean? So you'd love to see Tyrone just go, look. And I think if Tyrone play that kicking game, Donegal will bring their kicking game too, and we'll see a much better game.
That's it. If both teams go for it, it'll be an absolute cracker.
Brilliant,
because it will actually suit both teams.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if the two of them go for it? Because let's be honest, it wasn't a great day weekend for the Black Debt football. So Fermanagh, we know these tactics are outdated. We've said it so many times. Fermanagh scored 9 points. Carlow scored 9 points. Carlow lost by 15. Fermanagh were in the game, I suppose, but they're very extreme on it. Donegal kicked long range points. I was reading a stat, 9 of their 13 scores came from outside the 35 metre mark. Now, you could argue to say that, you know, they're not high percentage shots, but at the same time,
yeah, but on a dry day in championship football,
yeah, Donegal have some very good long range point kickers with Thompson and McGee and Langan and all these fellas, although I'm not sure was Langan playing?
Langan did, he was playing.
So Donegal went full 18 minutes at the start without their opening score. Then they got into it a little bit, and they ended up there was a wind as well, so they
were playing against the breeze. And look, these defensive teams, they're full of energy at the start, full of high intensity stuff, and sometimes it just takes time for that to be worn down. And you know, the longer the game went on, the more it was just Donegal pulling away, and they could have won by a lot more. Like McBrearty flicked the ball over the bar when he was played through. If he needed to, he could have gone for a goal. A couple of incidents like that where if Donegal were really pressed, they probably could have gone for another pass and threatened the goal.
Yeah, something like that. So Carlo obviously were deplorable really against Meath. They rallied, they went 4 points to nothing down. Broderick went off, so he wasn't making much difference anyway, but I think he was injured. And then they rallied to get it to 4-3. Then Meade they scored two goals before half time. That was the end of it then. So like, I mean, they never really were in the game. They never had a chance. Then again, it is a team promoted to Division 1 against a team relegated to Division 4. So there's no surprises here. They were beaten by 15 points. Those tactics can't win games, because Meade, like I said last Thursday, have plenty of experience playing against defensive teams. They've showed that in Navan against Tyrone. They wouldn't give them turnovers. When they gave them turnovers, they tracked like demons. They got the ball back, and Carlow had nothing up front. You just can't win. You can't win against tactically smart teams anymore with those tactics.
No, they're done. They are gone. And Meade have been playing against defensive. Meade have beaten Fermanagh already in the league as well. So they played Fermanagh last year as well.
Meade played it well. It's boring to watch.
It's horrible to look at.
They just avoided contact at all times. They shipped it off over.
Always had loads of cover behind the lines. Like, Meade were never going to get caught on a counter-attack because they always had three or four spare defenders.
Menton's actually very good in a game like that.
He's very good.
He's good because in that loose play.
Yeah, he drives as a late runner. Yeah. He's an accurate shooter and he can score from distance. So, I mean, he's a huge weapon. And look, realistically, like, it was a surprise. Like, I mean, to just allow Donal Keoghan to be raiding forward up the field for the whole game, I mean, it's just mad stuff. You wouldn't do it. Like, if you're going back into your shell, you make sure that you tag certain runners rather than going completely zonal. Because some guys, you don't really have to track them too hard. You can just pick them up when they come into a zone. But other guys, need to be followed all the time.
The day of retreating off your man waiting inside your 45 and offering them free pass up to your 45, that is so old and basic that I can't believe teams like Fermanagh and Carlow are still doing it. Like, it's poxy to watch. We all know that. It gets you no results anymore. It got Carlow a result last year against Kildare, Kildare nearly got caught by Wicklow and Longford.
The great ambush worked at one point in time. Teams are aware of it now. And even to play that way, I can understand it as a tactic, but you need to have probably two brilliant big ball winning forwards that can score points and can score frees and kick from distance. Like, Fermanagh end up with their cornerbacks coming forward shooting on their bad foot, and they were the same against Meath. They kicked a load of wides against Meath in the league because they've the wrong guy shooting, because they don't actually have any players with kicking ability really on the pitch, bar a couple of guys, and they spend all their time tracking runners and playing around the middle when they need to be higher up the field.
And incredibly, Westmeath yesterday had forwards that could score, but their tactics were absolutely bizarre. We'll talk about that a little bit in part two. But Carlow's discipline went completely. So Sean Murphy, who the few Carlow lads behind me, his nickname is Choo Choo. So for obvious reasons, he was their best player by a mile, and he always is.
He's a great player,
fire in his belly, he's great pace, and it's nearly too obvious that they're constantly looking for him running late, and he's got great heart in him, and he's just an outstanding player, and he would walk onto any team in the country. He hit Kyogan twice, two punches in the face for no reason at all. Like, I mean, it was Kyogan that had gotten some sort of a shoulder, or there was a little bit of argy-bargy, and there was no need to do it. That he got sent off. They were gone at that stage. They were 7 points down. Sean St. Ledger got a black card for a body check and stopped the man running through, and he pleaded innocence, and Owen Root got black card as well, and their discipline just completely went. We obviously know that Brendan Murphy was gone, and Poacher and Turlough O'Brien were gone as well. So, like, I mean, it's not a good reflection on their kind of setup. And especially when you see Poacher coming out after the game, and he had no input into the game at all because he was suspended, but he made sure to do some media afterwards, and it was like David Brent. Like, I mean, listen to this. There was probably more media coverage about our suspension than there was about any suspension in the history of the GAA, which is phenomenal for a Division 4 team. Just think about that. What media attention?
I don't really remember, to be honest.
Appealed it twice, and that was reported. I don't remember any media attention outside of that. If you don't want media attention, then take your ban like a man, because we all saw the video. Then try to blame Leash for leaking the video. Sure, how did Leash get that video? I'll admit, I have no idea. The thing about this is, here's another quote. It's phenomenal that we would generate that interest, but maybe we ruffled a few feathers last year and people didn't obviously enjoy that. So this fella has it in his head that he got very harsh treatment because people were annoyed about Carlow winning a game or two. Is this lad living in a cloud cuckoo? Leash couldn't give a shit about Carlow. Leash have beaten Carlow four times in the last 2 years. They never looked in trouble in any of those four games. Like, is this lad living in a dream world that Leash going for promotion and Carlow going for relegation, that Leash are going to leak a video on the week of that game to try and rattle Carlow? Like, what does he think is going on here?
Look, I don't know. Look, all I can say is that the notion that that there's an anti-Carlow bias that's beyond belief to me.
Blame the rule. He blamed the rule. He blamed referees. He blamed Leash. He blamed the wider GA community for them ruffling feathers, and he blamed media coverage. And not once did he accept that they shouldn't surround a referee and Turlough shouldn't run onto the field and incite a situation where two supporters came in and one went to hit the referee. Like, now, seriously now, because this is bullshit, and how anyone even puts a microphone in front of that lad's mouth, I have no clue.
Well, look, he does a lot of talking for a coach that's involved in an inter-county setup. There's very few do as much media work. That's grand. I just don't really understand it. I mean, if you get a suspension, if you want to appeal it, surely you want to have grounds for your appeal. If there's no, like, otherwise accept it and move on.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary talk. It's a distraction from the group. It's self-serving. I don't see the basis for it.
And also,
look, the notion that there was any, like, if anything, people were delighted that Carlo beat Kildare last year, and it was a real feel-good story, and people are delighted to see Carlo doing well.
Yeah, but it's an insight into the psychology of what he's pumping into the minds of these Carlo players.
But the problem is that he's taken it something very personally. Carlo play a certain style of football. Most people don't like to look at that. It worked reasonably well for Carlo last year. It's not working for them this year. So when it works for you, yeah, I suppose get the credit for it. You say it's not pretty, but it works. It's effective. When it's not working, you have to take it on the chin and say it's not working. It's not pretty and it's not working. So, like, you can't have all the credit and then take none of the blame.
No.
So,
well, these David
it
Brent
has to be a bit more balanced than
these,
that now.
These David Brent type characters, they don't seem to see the other side of it. And, like, I mean, if your whole management team has the attitude he has towards that suspension, well, is there any surprise that Sean Murphy hits Keoghan two punches and then Daniel St. Ledger gets a black card, you know what I mean? And then they won't take responsibility for that, and that's a whole culture within a squad, you know what I mean?
I understand there's a wider point to it, maybe, that possibly has an impact, but look, it's very difficult to say. I don't know what their disciplinary record was like throughout the league campaign or even last year. I can't really remember, but nonetheless, I just think it's unseemly, all this sort of appealing bans and stuff like that. I mean, look, it is what it is. If you get a suspension, it's generally merited.
I'll leave you with this last quote from him without any comment. It's absolutely insane. The rules are ridiculous. The problem is that referees are now writing the rule in the report, so you have no way out. We'll be back in part two.
I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his line, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
So let's start off with Roscommon's style of play. So Peter Canavan showed it perfectly on Sky on Saturday night. So, like, I mean, it's a pretty modern setup. You're a two-man full forward line, which is grand. Then you have Cathal Craig standing out in front of the two of them. And this is always a problem I have, and this is a problem with Westmead and Leash yesterday, in that they play two men up front and then there's a huge disconnect. So Roscommon always had that out ball right and left of Craig. Right, so, like, I mean, there was always a kick pass on. If you don't have that out ball, now obviously Mayo not playing a sweeper helped that, but in fairness, usually the sweeper would have stood behind Craig anyways, marking the two. So that out ball right and left of him, and we've championed this all last year, you have to have that linkman. Now, I'd play two linkmen. Amount of ball Cottle Craig won early before Lee Keegan went on him, left and right. It's a really difficult role, that, because you have to constantly make runs very hard. But if you've got pace, it's an easy role because you've got so much space left and right.
Yeah, that's true.
And you make it so much easier on the players coming out the field. Right, we don't have to work this through the hands with Mayo's press. We have an option, and there's a huge margin of error left and right of Craig, and it's up to him to get free and let's stick it down onto each wing. Isn't that, and again, I will talk about Leash and Westmead in a while, constantly the kick was not on to the two men that were being covered by sweepers, and constantly they had to work the ball up to the hand, giving the other team enough time to get back 13 behind the ball. Both teams, whole game with this same shit, no kick pass on. And I'll talk about them allowing the other team play with a sweeper with a gale force wind is just mind numbingly stupid. But, like, such something small like that, Roscommon defending in numbers but able to get that ball down there with a kick pass, great to watch. We saw contests, and, like, I mean, it seems to me like a no brainer.
Yeah, well, look, Roscommon have quality up front, and what they made sure was, even though they were getting bodies back and blocking up, making it difficult for Mayo to break them down, they carried a threat. And that's what you have to do to keep the other team somewhat honest. Because otherwise it's just back to the wall stuff for the whole game, and you can't get out because there's too many bodies there. So having that link, as you say, is just ideal, because it can be popped over the cover.
Over midfield. Yeah, it's really bouncing past midfield.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's about just getting you 40 metres further up the pitch so that when your link man gets it and then he maybe offloads, it can be delivered to the danger zone.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, that definitely, like, people talk about it. I was reading Aidan O'Rourke on the RTE website and he was complaining about Mayo and not doubling up on Conor Cox. And I can see his point. But at the same time, like, I think he was trying to promote them having a sweeper back there. That's not James Horan's philosophy, right? So James Horan is an attacking manager. Like, for example, Klopp or Pep Guardiola are. They like high presses. They don't like to lose a player from that high press by going back to sweep, or else you're only having two lads and the press is not effective. If you take a man out of it to sweep, it doesn't work. And I'm sick of seeing teams, Leash and Westmead, again, the same thing, trying to press with one man down up there and trying to press kickouts. It's not going to work. They'll tap into the cornerback, they have a man over, they could even use their goalie to have two men over, and they're getting up there. So you've wasted your time. You'd be well off doing what Carlo or Fermanagh do.
Yeah.
And the press has to be with everybody. Like, I mean, and you have to do that. But that's what Mayo do. That's why they're so exciting to watch. Yes, they leave themselves vulnerable behind. Barcelona leave themselves vulnerable because they're an attacking team. You can't criticise them for that. That's they're taking that risk with the added advantage of what they're going to gain on the other side. And they did 17 points and 16 wides. Yeah. Like, Mayo should have won this game.
Oh yeah, they absolutely should have won the game. I mean, individual errors cost Mayo the match. It's as simple as that. You can point to how they were exposed in certain situations at the back, but they put faith in their defenders one-on-one. In general, it's not too bad. I mean, look at Roscommon's first goal was poor defending from Keith Higgins. He was caught wrong side, and Chris Barrett didn't cut off the danger. So that's, we spoke about this, that's just bad decision making from individual defenders.
Yeah.
That's not a systemic problem.
Yeah. It was a great run. It must have been Glennon there that made that run and got out of there. But
it's good attacking play. It's kind of naive defensive
play. It is. When you make that run to get out of there, it's very rare your man will come with you for
very
that run.
Rare.
I couldn't believe Chris Barrett, because this is defending when I was a back. This is when it was always man on man.
Yeah.
And this was a decoy run.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I don't know, have sweepers messed this up or not, but that, even though Mayo played with a sweeper for a while under Rochford, but I don't know if now, because you have a sweeper to cover, you're just going with your man stupidly. Because years ago, 10 years ago, Chris Barrett wouldn't have done that, maybe.
Look, good defending in that particular situation would have meant Chris Barrett blocked off the goals. Maybe it's recycled to Glennon who kicks a point.
Yeah.
And you say, good attack and play by Roscommon. Barrett did well to cover it. His man got a score, but he made the right defensive decision. Like, putting a load of defenders back there, yeah, grand. That might stop that, but it means the opposition have the ball free for every kick out. The reason Mayo got themselves into the game and dominated a lot of the game was because they pressed up bodies and they dominated the middle third for large parts of the game.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes the opposition get a tap down and they break on you, and you maybe you don't have cover, and they might get a score on the counter, but you're like, Horan is accepting that as a risk.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's saying, we're going to dominate for more of the game, we're going to press up high because this suits my players, this is the way we want to play. And they had 32 shots on goal. They should have won the game.
Yeah.
Like, they were the more dominant team. They just missed too many chances. Like, even if you look at it, Ross, the contrast between the two goalkeepers, Henley went short, caused a goal. Roscommon, even though they weren't winning in the middle of the field, kept going long when there was a risk of a short. Free taking, Henley missed three or four, and the Roscommon goalkeeper, I think Gavin, got three out of his four.
O'Malley.
So that's not necessarily a huge criticism of Henley, but there's just decisions on the field from two goalkeepers that directly influence the final result.
Why is Henley going short at all? At all? When there is
I have no idea, an
obvious domination for Mayo.
This
is not just an advantage. This is a domination where Roscommon are terrified of that kickout. We've talked about this before. This is just goalies trying to show an array of kickouts. I'm convinced of it because there's no logic to that.
There's no logic to it.
None. Absolutely not. So in the Carlo game, one of the good things Carlo did early, Meade had a big press, aggressive press, and their goalkeeper went straight up the middle. And it was their full forward, Dara Foley,
Foley
who caught the ball and immediately turned and tried to move it on. We've seen this from Carlo before when it was half blocked down. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I must keep my eye out for this. And he kicked out the ball, I don't know how many times, for the rest of the first half, and I didn't see that kick out again. Yeah. Like, isn't that weird? He was tapping it to the corner backs.
Yeah, look.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. I think it's a disease that is set into goalkeepers that they have to go to this corner back. And when you're doing that and conceding a goal, when you've Aidan O'Shea and Rouen, who are a completely dominating midfield,
you have to factor in the conditions and everything like that. It's too much of a risk in those scenarios. If it's very much on, or there's a pocket of space to hit, but I mean the one that Henley went for was exceptionally difficult.
Yeah,
you had Harrison moving across the line of the goals. It's played central. Even if that was Harrison moving out to the corner and he plays it to the corner and it goes over the sideline or it gets intercepted maybe wider on the field, you can kind of say, okay, look, he calculated that. It was less of a risk. He wasn't kind of going central. But when you play one short down the middle, and so many teams try it now, they try to leave maybe the fullback free or the centre-back free so that you move up to position and you mark everybody and you leave maybe one option for the keeper, and it's a sort of a half an option where where the keeper's looking at it going, oh, he's on here.
Yeah.
But all the players on the opposition team are waiting for the ball to be kicked to this man. They're setting the trap and four men can converge. And the best place to do that press is in the centre of the field because the reward is so much greater. Because if you turn it over, it's a goal. If you don't turn it over, worst case scenario, it's back to the keeper or it's out to the corner back and there's no threat.
Yeah, no, that's it, exactly. Like, I mean, you remember Port Leash talking last year where they would offer the corner back a little bit, and I saw Leash doing that a lot yesterday. So, like, I mean, if they go to the corner back, you shepherd them down the wing and someone will close them off there. And if he doesn't go to the corner back, we have zoned in on somebody that might be getting it in the middle. So yeah. You often see in a lot of games corner backs going right to the wings, but they're never marked. Now, like I said,
the homework is done on the opposition and you pick the worst ball player in the opposition and you leave him free.
Yeah, no, it's exactly my theory on it is if there's a full court press, do never go short. Not go short. On those occasions where everyone is being marked out zonally and the opposition has got up, then go long. I don't care if your midfield is shite. That's too risky. Now, there's loads of occasions in a game after points from play where there'll be a quick kick out going on and there'll be loads of space. Absolutely go for it then, a quick restart. Get out quick with your ball, put it down, get it out. But when the press is on, and the press can only come on after set plays, a good one, then just go long with every one of them. Don't mess around with those ones. It's too risky. So I don't know why they always do that. Your man Andrew Glennon, I thought, was very hard done by getting taken off at half time. He set up the goal and he scored a point.
Yeah, I thought he was good, yeah.
Now, they wanted to get Dermot Murta on. And, like, I mean, you have to give Roscommon a lot of credit in that, like, we theorise about tactics a lot on the show here. And obviously, if Mayo are pressing all over the field, the long ball is on. Because even in the second half, it seemed to be a two-man full forward line rather than that link man. And they were just getting it on in there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, which they deserve a lot of credit for that, because that did contribute to such a great, exciting game. And I know it seems so simple, but a lot of teams don't even do that, including Leash and Westmeath yesterday.
Yeah, look, Roscommon left enough men up the field to be a threat. The forwards that they had up there are quality, and they got a couple of spectacular scores to just get themselves over the line against a Mayo team who dominated more of the game and missed their chances.
Yeah.
Like, Mayo are a stronger team than Roscommon. They dominated more of the game, but because Roscommon carried the threat and because there was a very poor decision from the Mayo goalkeeper, Mayo lost the game.
Yeah.
And we can analyse all the tactics we want, but individual talent up front from Roscommon and leaving them up there to carry that threat was one major tactical move, despite because it's all defensive tactics we talk about all the time and getting cover back and all this sort of stuff. But nonetheless, even though Mayo didn't do that and left themselves one-on-one, they still should have won the game. Like,
yeah.
So the tactics can give you some chance in a game, but it will always come down to skill execution. Always come down to skill execution and quality of players on the field.
On that night,
on the given night.
And it was funny, like, I mean, Lee Keegan into the goalie's hands, you know, at the end, and then a terrible hand pass to Andy Moran, which resulted in a turnover. Did that result in Andy Moran getting the black card? These are your leaders.
Yeah, like, there's the ones that I've, apart from Henley's miss freeze, Keegan dropping one short, Dermot O'Connor's left footed miss for a goal chance in the first half was a wondrous effort, McLaughlin free at the end, and Andy Moran's blocked down. He shouldn't have been shooting. That shot wasn't on. He was always going to be blocked, and that
That led to Craig's point. Yeah. So, like, I mean, that was a big talk.
And then you contrast that with the quality of some of the other scores. Durkin kicked a brilliant score from the right wing. Boland kicked a couple of brilliant scores. And then for Roscommon, Cox, Craig, like, there was quality scores from both teams.
Cohen was on fire. Absolute quality.
Oh, Darren Cohen, yeah, was unbelievable as well.
And him getting taken off was a big, big surprise. I don't know why they took him off. But here's Cottle Craig talking after the match. He says, maybe years in the past we would have gave up on things when things were going against us and we would have conceded goals. I suppose the defensive side of things, he has really shored that up. He's talking about Anthony Cunningham. He just gave us belief to really maximise what we have in the squad. Like, isn't this defensive thing is very interesting in that he's getting credited for fixing their defence. They had the worst defensive record in the whole of Division 1 and across the whole league outside of Sligo. They conceded 17 and 16 wides. It's a weird defensive system, as in their bodies back. It's still not a great defensive system, but again, if you're leaving three up with a link man for the two, you're not defending with... You're losing two, which a lot of teams would do. But
they could limit goal chances, is the thing.
They're trying to avoid goals.
I think they're trying to avoid conceding goals as much as possible. But there's always an offset. If you drop bodies back, you steal from your attack.
Yeah.
If you steal too many from your attack, you have nothing up front, but you're going to be probably very solid at the back.
Yeah, it looked like they got a good balance, yeah.
They had a reasonable balance on the day, and they had quality up front and brilliant score-taking on the night. You know, if Cox and Craig and these guys up front and Murtha and Enda Smith, when he came on, kicked a lovely score, I mean, if they're delivering that sort of quality finishing, you're staying in a lot of games, because even on the counter-attack, even with limited supply, they were scoring brilliantly on the counter.
Yeah, they were. I was reading a stat in RT, they had 26 shots from 30 attacks, which is an incredible stat.
Very good.
And like I said, they only had three, so their bench came on and made a huge impact. But like, their bench is incredible. Dermot Murtha, Enda Smith, Donny Smith, Conor Devaney, Brian Stack, Fintan Craig. All of them were starters last year in the Connacht final. They all made an impact. And maybe Cunningham, like, Enda Smith's his captain. I presume he's coming back in. He broke his finger. Like, I mean, he has to start. Like, but like, maybe if he's leaving, Dermot Murtha has to start too, right? They're two. But maybe if he wants to leave Donny Smith, Conor Devaney, Brian Stack, Fintan Craig on the bench to give them that little lift. And they all of those players, Donny Smith, Conor Devaney, Fintan Craig, are all quality score takers that can influence a game when they come on. And maybe he wants to maybe pick...
He's picking more physical players.
Darcy, Ulton Harney playing in the forwards but going out around midfield, and just a bit more physicality, and Killoran in midfield, and the three Dailies at the back who weren't there last year, and they're physical fellas. We know what they're all about. Like, I mean, even James Horan referenced them in the lead up to the game, that they're going to be physical because they're known for that. Hussey at centre back. This is what he's going for now. You know, he's going for that more physical team rather than maybe the lighter, fancier footballing team than we saw last year that didn't get them very far.
Yeah, no, look, it's worked out for them on the night there. They, like, because of the quality they have, and they were probably unlucky in some of their league games, but I think they were developing and learning all the time, and Cunningham was getting to know his players a bit better and the kind of the guys that he'd want in the battle in a wet night in Castlebar. And the Dailies are a huge addition. I mean, their physicality, their athleticism, and they're just so solid in possession. More often than not, made a couple of errors between them, but at the same time, they contributed hugely to the Roscommon victory. And to have quality like that coming back into your panel is, sure, it's massive. Like,
yeah, it's massive. There's no doubt about that. So fantastic stuff from Roscommon. But again, it's not all doom and gloom for Mayo, although they have got failings. We said that forward line wouldn't be good enough, and as it proved out, it wasn't good enough. Although
Killian O'Connor's missing is a huge loss.
Darren Cohen looks like he's a definite option on the positive side. Kevin McLaughlin needs to go back out to the half forward line. You know, Aidan O'Shea potentially back into the forward line. And I think Mayo, they're not done yet. They should make Super 8. I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but it's definitely a kick in the arse for them, because there's no way they wanted to go down this route. Definitely not. Especially after how well the league went. So Laois Westmeath, 12-10 to Laois. Westmeath only scored 4 points from playing the entire game. Westmeath were in a huge disappointment. Very, very defensive team. Played it very, very defensively. with the wind and against the wind. Now, you could understand they started a defender in their forwards and played with a seventh defender, freed up James Dolan as the sweeper. No big surprises there. We kind of knew that he was the sweeper in the league. Really disappointingly, Laois, because Laois play a kicking game. They had Colin Murphy in there, Paul Kingston, and they had Evan O'Carroll, and they were left inside, right, for the whole of the first half. They had a three-man full forward line, which is grand. Now, they had low link man, the whole half forward line, and the three lads pretty much played as a full forward line, and that's silly, because that the obvious thing is to play one out in front, right and left, and that space was on, because James Dolan was covering the three of them when they were in behind James Dolan. Immediately, tactically, that was wrong. Colin Begley was Laois's sweeper. Now, the wind was so strong, Cian, that the wind was as good as two extra defenders to you. So there's no need for you to pick a third. Begley can play half forward, push him right up on Dolan. A couple of times Dolan come up the field late because Laois had paired off on Westmead. Colin Begley comes out to meet him. He's flat footed. Dolan's coming at him. And I'm just thinking, why the hell is Begley not up on him on the other side of the field? Because the wind, like I said, the wind was so strong. Impossible for Westmead to get up the other end of the field with a kick pass to reach their full forward line. It was just impossible. And I think maybe because Laois had lost to Westmead twice this year, they were a little bit afraid and conservative. It's not like Laois, because they tried to force them kick passes, right? Paul Kingston got two amazing scores in the first half.
Two unbelievable points. But Evan O'Carroll kicked a cracker.
See where they both
well,
got
yeah.
the balls. They yeah. got them on the sideline because Dolan was covering the middle. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, you have that really good full forward line. Poor young Murphy, who is, I think that was his debut, never got a kick because he was playing in the middle and the lads were breaking maybe to the wings. And I was thinking, if you want to play a kick pass, which is what Laois wanted, you have that huge advantage of a gale force wind. You have to take Dolan out of play. You yeah. just have to. It's criminal not taking Dolan out of play.
Yeah, well, I think whatever about, you know, leaving Begley back, you can understand Laois being a little bit conservative after losing to them and being caught with kind of Westmead's powerful runners on the break, particularly in the league final, that maybe they're being a bit cagey. I can get
yeah,
that.
But with that wind, I would accept that.
I know, but even what I would say is, even outnumbered, if you have three guys in there, the first runner needs to come out and occupy the sweeper.
Yeah.
That's always the thing that you say.
Yeah.
Even if you only had two forwards in there against
one
three
would
men,
occupy
one man needs to occupy the sweeper. Sometimes that means you just move out and you almost mark the sweeper.
Out beside him.
Stand
yeah.
where he is, or that you make sure that every time you make a run, it's really eye-catching for the sweeper. You're never really looking for the ball, but you're making that run really hard, making a load of noise so that you drag the sweeper even 5-10 yards. Just do something to move him so that he takes his eye off the guys inside, and then that's how they get the opportunity. So from Laois's perspective, that's something that they could have done a bit better,
yeah,
really.
It was. And they didn't, Laois never pushed Begley up for kickouts. So they tried to split this Westmead kickout, which was a waste of time because Westmead were getting it away. They never intercepted
and
any
playing
of them.
With such a strong breeze, that you would think that that's flawed, really.
That's the thing. And like Meade against Carlow, Meade have a brilliant press. You talked about that before. They really have an aggressive press and they come alive
at
this.
When they do it, particularly Meade, who have seen a lot of this year, when they really do that press, they're excellent. Sometimes what happens is they don't do it fully. They leave someone sitting in the half back line.
Well, then you're not
and
pressing.
And then you can't do it.
Then you're not pressing.
And what they did against Offaly, which was a massive problem the last day for Meade, was that they always held that man back in the half.
But then it's not a press.
So it wasn't. So Offaly won all of their own kickouts, which contributed to Meade not being in the game because they didn't have the ball enough.
Yeah, yeah. They need to learn that. It's not a press if you're leaving one man back. It's just not. It's just not. Because you can only split so much and the goalkeeper will get it away because the cornerbacks are making it so wide that the split between, say, the fullback and the cornerback is so wide that the fella doesn't know what to do. He'll stand maybe closer to the fullback and offer the cornerback, which is the right thing to do, but you're still getting it off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, it's not a press. Westmead in the second half pressed the Laois kick out with everybody, but only in the second half of the half when they were really desperate. They left Heslin inside in his own, I think, with young O'Toole. And it is O'Toole, isn't it? Your man from Heslin's club. Yeah. And 70 yards of space between the two of them. And Laois with a man covering the two of them. So it was a complete waste of time for Westmead. Westmead would turn Laois over. There was so many turnovers in this game. It was such a low quality game. But
and that's also, to my mind again, it's strange. Heslin is a brilliant long range score taker. I would have thought with the breeze, you bring Heslin out and you play him at centre forward, wing forward, midfield. You get him on, you even play him half back or something. You get him on the ball moving forward, unmarked, and he'll kick points from 50, 60 metres.
They moved him around a lot. He was in for the throw-in and got a point straight from the throw-in in the second half. Then he was in the full forward line. The thing about these two lads, in a full forward line, two-man full forward line, a huge space between them and a sweeper covering them. So Westmeath turn Laois over or Laois give away the ball, which happened right throughout the game. Westmeath look up. Sure, that kick pass isn't on to these lads. So now they have to work it through the hands. So they're throwing it over, back, and all the time Laois are filtering back, 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 back. By the time Westmeath get to Laois 45, Laois have 13 men back behind the ball. 13, leaving one forward up. What's the point in Westmeath having an advantage of a wind if they're playing like this? Yeah. They continue this keen right throughout the second half, completely played into Laois's hands, backed off Laois then instead of pressing them really hard. Laois, the amount of time in the second half Laois wasted by just playing it over and back in front of the screen. And there's at times they went back to the sweeper and back to Brodie and started all over again.
Yeah.
And this is when Westmeath had to try and get back a lead.
Yeah, well, look,
just
like
to watch
say,
it, it was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, well, like, you have to accept sometimes that you are going to leave gaps in your defence if you want to press on to the opposition and get the ball back.
With a Gale Force win, the threat is tiny.
It is. Well, it's much reduced because basically all you have to do is track runners. So if you have an honest team and they track their runners and they do their jobs, the opposition are fairly limited in how they can hurt you because the scoring zone is so small. You have ample opportunity if you press right up. You have loads of time to get back. Loads of time to get back if your team are honest and hard working.
Yeah.
I think that if you just leave guys sitting back there, it's a waste of time. It's kind of cheating in some respects.
It is.
In terms of making life easy even on your own team.
I'd say Laois could not believe it. Like, Laois were throwing the ball around in the second half against that wind out around midfield with no pressure on them, over, back, over, back. Imagine if they were being pressed man for man. You'd be like, oh shit, who am I going to give it to? You could end up just hand-passing it away.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing on. When you're facing a gale force wind, a man slapping at you.
Oh yeah, and the skill level is difficult, even with the breeze anyway, to control
but
it.
But you look up, you finally get to sidestep this fella. So he's coming after you and he's tackling you and you're like, I need to give this on. And you look up and everyone's paired off, being marked. You're snookered.
Yeah.
Whereas if these lads are all dropping off and all you do is ship it back to someone behind you. Like, you can't believe your luck. Laois could not believe their luck in the second half. But anyways, Westmeath got what they deserved, which was, you know, a loss on a day that they didn't do enough to win the game. Right, we'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
Advice he gave me back then was, we were in the Glenroy on a night out and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, you won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me. I said, all right, well, okay.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
Okay, so we'll start Paddy Power performance of the weekend with Conor Cox. I'm a big fan of Conor Cox. Now, I'd say there's a day where Conor Cox go out in the field and his shooting boots aren't on and he would drive you insane. He's like, stop shooting from two... talk about a confident player. He reminds me of Bernard Brogan before Pat Gilroy got his hand on them.
A shot merchant.
And I'm getting my shot away. Now, left or right, he is that accurate that I can see why he's like that. And I suppose,
to be fair, it is his job in the team probably.
It is his job as a scorer. And to be fair, you know, in the modern game, that if you have a one-on-one, you need to throw a sidestep inside and get your shot off.
Yeah, it doesn't last long.
Or else Aidan O'Shea or Ruan is coming back and you're being doubled up. Now, I think he got his shots off very, very fast every time he scored. Like, I mean, the 3 points he scored were outstanding.
Yeah, the one in the second half off his right foot from the wing was a ridiculous point, because even Harrison, he didn't really get far away from Harrison. Harrison almost still had a hand on him, and it was just an unbelievable kick with a defender coming across onto him. Now, as you say, on another day, you'd be thinking, oh, geez, don't shoot. You know, it's not on, but it worked for him. He backed himself. He had the confidence. And he has been doing it regularly for Roscommon and probably has done over his career. So fair play to him. Like, it was magnificent.
An outstanding league. And one with the left as well. So he's got left and right. And he's a stocky sort of a player. I'd say in that situation, with that point, Harrison was like, oh, okay, if you want to shoot from there, I'll let you. Like, I mean, I just don't want you to take me on. And
absolutely. Like, Harrison didn't do a lot wrong. But
no.
Having said that, sometimes in those one-on-one situations, I mean... You see defenders, and it's probably just because one-on-ones are so rare. He just got too close to a strong player. Like, Cox wasn't going to beat him for pace. So by if he just stood even a half a yard further back off him, he's in a position that if Cox goes to shoot, he can get in and put him under serious pressure, that Cox is going to have to kick it very high. But I just think sometimes defenders, they rush in, they get too close, and with a strong guy like Cox, he's able to just put the ball under his arm, hand off, and then he can pull the trigger. So look, you could question Harrison a little bit there, but that'd be being ultra harsh. It was brilliant play from Cox.
Yeah, Paddy McBrearty and Jamie Brennan, I'm nearly putting these as a joint nomination. Jamie Brennan's got very good at getting the ball in his hands, dropping it down his foot and getting a shot away really fast as well. Like, I mean, there's a huge skill in that, and I notice him doing this a lot. Whereas McBrearty will wind up and you know he's going to shoot. Brennan's able to receive a hand pass, drop it down his foot and control a kick really, really fast. Can't he in tight situations?
Yeah, well, it was particularly evident the other day, even where he's standing sort of on the back leg, we'll say, where he's standing still. He's just after selling a dummy, but he can't drive forward because he's driving into the crowd. And he clipped two beautiful scores. His first two scores were excellent. The third one, he had plenty of time over it. But he actually, I would have said Brennan was probably Donegal's best forward when the game was a contest. Right. There's a few of them kick scores a little bit at their ease when the game was kind of
at
up. But he was good. He got vital scores from when they probably needed something to just give them a bit of energy.
And McBrearty got a typical McBrearty point where he's running off the left wing. And you wonder, maybe there's a bit of a Sean Cavanagh about that. You know what he's going to do, but it must be very hard to stop him. Because you'd imagine if you've that many zonal players back, that the minute you see McBrearty coming in off that left thing.
But he's just so powerful over the first 5 yards that when he receives the pass, he just accelerates those 2-3 metres and then he really pulls the trigger and pulls it hard. And the trajectory of his shot is quite high, so it's very difficult. I mean, to block him, you need to be right on top of him. So look, that's why he's as good as he is, and it was a huge boost for Donegal to get him, and for him to get so much game time as well, you know, leading into Tyrone.
Yeah, Carl Craig, I think, was outstanding. Well, then Ollie Keegan quieting him down, but his goal was absolutely beautiful to identify that and went away from Keith Higgins for pace, which I was very surprised about.
Very powerful.
But punted the goal.
Yeah, unusual enough.
Technically difficult.
It got there.
It was like Paddy O'Shea back in the 1980s. It was a beautiful punted goal. And it was out of nothing. And let's be honest, that was a moment of brilliance that won the game for us.
Crucial.
Was the difference. The other goal came from a mistake from Mayo. But this was Cottle Craig, at his age, taking on that responsibility early, identifying that Higgins, you know, was there in a one-on-one, going past him, was helped obviously by the decoy run that Barrett fell for. So I'd say when he saw Barrett in front of him, he was thinking there's no goal on here yet, and then suddenly here there is a goal on it, and just punted it in.
Yeah, it just opened up for him, because I'd say he'd back his strength against Higgins, put the ball under his arm and shrugged him off. And I'd say then when he took the solo and realised there was no cover defender, he's thinking, okay, one more play here and it's in the net. And look at the role he was playing in that position. He was always going to tire out of the game.
And it
needed fresh legs when it did. And in fairness, Keegan is well renowned as a brilliant man marker as well. And he was getting a little bit more physical, and he's a more determined man marker than Higgins is. Higgins is a little bit looser, tries to maybe anticipate where the ball is going, whereas Keegan doesn't really do that. He just marks the man.
Yeah, I think Canavan caught on his analysis showed Higgins was completely ball watching, which at this level is unusual. Like, he was just caught.
Do you know? Yeah, he was, because he was caught
because
he
ball.
Was completely wrong side.
Craig
because
was gone.
If you look at the goal, I mean, the ball was in the Roscommon left half back position. The only place
you have
that
to stand that side.
He should have been that side of the field. So he did just get caught. But again, his starting position was sort of on the offensive side from Mayo perspective, maybe if something broke over the top, but he didn't get back into the cover position quick enough, and that was all it was. Look, he was punished severely. A forward of lesser quality wouldn't have been able to do what Craig did.
No, definitely not. And it's always like, I've played enough at centre forward and wing forward to know that wing backs always stand at that side of the field, because the natural thing for you to do is run towards the wing, because everybody wants to kick the ball up the wing. And I'm always trying to say now that you're better off go on the wing and break infield and let the ball. It's as easy kick it infield as it is down the wing. And you're completely tricking out the wing back. But Craig didn't even have to do that at that level of football. Craig just made the obvious run towards the wing and got about five yards of space.
I think if you were to do a comparison, if Keane O'Sullivan, say, was in that position.
You're not getting that ball.
Keane O'Sullivan, number one, would have been goal side.
Yeah.
So worst case scenario, you win the ball out in the wing and he's in front of you. That's what happens. You know, he doesn't take chances. He just does the good defensive thing. He doesn't overcommit to try and win the ball first time. He's a cautious defender. But that's what good defenders do. They anticipate what's going to be the worst thing that could happen here. And the worst thing is always a goal.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, okay, from Laois then you had Garrett Dillon, who was outstanding the whole game. Evan O'Carroll got 8 points, three from play, three really good ones from play and a really important one in the second half. But I think Garrett Dillon was probably the best man on the field. Dennis Boot, very good for Laois as well. Colin Begley, John O'Loughlin battled well in midfield, and Kieran Lillis. Laois had some good performances, but again, the standard of play, God almighty, it was really, really, it was really, really tough. Darren Cohen, I wanted to talk about him because I'm wondering, is he a find for the Mayo team? Where has he been up until now? And if he can kick points like that, and it wasn't just the points, he got up for one and I think he just palmed it down to, was it Kevin McLaughlin going past him? And I was just thinking, geez, that was a really smart thing to do. His 5 points were outstanding. Seems to be a good target man. Like, he's a proper target man.
Size, yeah.
Where has he been? Like, I mean, maybe this, like, we've all had games where we've scored four or five.
He's probably just been held out of the team by Andy Moran and Killian O'Connor. Yeah. You know, that's just, it's difficult with players of that quality ahead of you. He hasn't had a huge amount of opportunity. He's played some league games, and in fairness, he hasn't played as well as he did the other night in a lot of those league games. So he's sort of missed those chances that were going over the bar from the other day. Oftentimes narrowly, sometimes missing them quite badly, you know, by a long distance, because he really puts a lot of power into his shots.
He's not shy at shooting for someone who's not guaranteed
look,
a starter.
Maybe that's part of the reason as to why he hasn't just made it. You know, his conversion rate probably just wasn't high enough.
Yeah, maybe that confidence will do him the world of good. And if they could get him as number 14, they definitely have a decent dynamic in there. Killian O'Connor just simply has to come back in. There's nothing sends panic through a team like not having a free taker, isn't there not? Like, I mean, it's just simple as that. It's just like, what is the
even
point?
Even for the opposition, I think as an opposing team, you can be a little bit more aggressive. Like, there's a bit of a fear sometimes if you're playing against a guy who, you know, he's going to score everything every time you give a free away. So you're not as aggressive maybe in your tackle, which can give players a little opportunity.
Yeah. James McGivney, who's top class player, as we know, his points that were shown on the highlights last night, typical James McGivney, long range points. And like, I mean, the wind was so long or so strong that I was surprised we didn't see like 12-10 in that first match. I just can't stop going on about it, Keane. Like, yeah. The way the both of them used the wind was absolutely horrific. And then obviously Kildare and Longford was more of an orthodox game. Like, I mean, Longford deserved credit for that as the underdog to not be coming out trying maybe packing the defence. But James McGivney got 4 from play, and he hit the post at the very end to win it for them, where Longford had 2 chances, didn't they? They did a slight goal chance and then that big long one.
One at the end of normal time and one at the end of extra time.
Yeah, you'd have put your money on him, like, you know, and that would have been a really famous win. But he's a really, really good player. So I'm not sure who to give performance of the weekend to. I suppose, it has to go to Conor Cox. He got 3 points right out of the top drawer. And Marcin Harrison, who you don't often see Harrison being taken from points for play like that. He's a brilliant defender.
No, 3 from play off Harrison is fair going.
It's fair going. Yeah. Fair going on a wet night like that. Especially, you know, maybe where we talked tactically about why he was getting a little bit more ball. Obviously, Mayo didn't play a man full time in behind him, but we've explained why that was the reason. And that's not a criticism.
If you have an all-star defender, why do you want a sweeper in front of him?
Exactly.
That's the other thing. You wouldn't do it at club level. You'd say, you win your battle now and get on with the game.
Exactly. Right. Okay. We're making a case for no sweepers and maybe...
Ever.
This is from two men who played on the full forward line. Right. Listen, we leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday with a preview show. What's on next week? Armagh Cavan, I think, is the big one next week. Ulster semi-final.
Yeah, that's on Sunday.
That's on Sunday. Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.